When I think about the number one reason, it's impact. And that is, it was a function of Truett Cathy in the fact that, you know, he said, we're not in the chicken business, we're in the people business. And so one of the things that I came to realize very, very early in my time in Chick-fil-A, in fact, probably more even in my interviewing process, was this is an organization that's about something bigger than themselves.
Welcome to the Follow My Lead podcast, where we transfer stories and best practices of today's leaders to the leaders of tomorrow with your host, John Eads.
Today we're joined by Deanne Turner, the Vice President of Enterprise Social Responsibility for Chick-fil-A, where she began her career more than 30 years ago. She previously served as the Vice President Corporate Talent for 16 years. Her first book, It's My Pleasure, The Impact of Extraordinary Talent and Compelling Culture, reveals the secret sauce behind building and growing Chick-fil-A's revolutionary business model. Turner believes talent offers competitive advantage in any organization, and companies that recognize the value of individuals can succeed not just ethically, but financially as well. We covered a ton of ground in our discussion. We talked about Chick-fil-A's culture, stories of how she came up in the organization and why she stayed there for so long, what the leadership team there really believes at its core, and why having a purpose as a business is so important. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Deanne Turner. Just a quick housekeeping item. This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft. Want to get more productivity out of your teams and ensure the activities and the tasks that they're doing are moving you forward towards your purpose, your mission, and your vision? Check out LearnLoft's new online program called High Performance Leadership at LearnLoft.com. Well, Deanne, we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, John. It's my pleasure to be with you this morning.
Well, it's funny that you start with It's My Pleasure, since that's the name of the book you wrote, and it's so much about your organization, your company. As a pretty much diehard Chick-fil-A fan, anytime I ask my 4-year-old son, I say, what do you want for dinner? 10 out of 10 times he says Chick-fil-A. So you have a diehard 4-year-old fan.
I like that.
it's always struck me, I'll tell a quick story about Chick-fil-A personally. I went for dinner and I got a salad, and a gentleman came out and he brought a peppercorn to put pepper grinder
yeah,
on my salad at a fast food restaurant, and it struck me like nothing ever, no other fast food restaurant that I've ever been to. Where does something of that detail come from? Is that just part of the organization?
That is, I'm so glad you had that experience and noticed it, because it's been such an intentional thing. And let me back up a little bit and tell you the story of It's My Pleasure, about how that came into Chick-fil-A, because it relates to the story you just talked about. Years ago, Truett Cathy had spent some time with Horst Schultze of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Group, and he was struck by the way they had this hospitality language around what they did. And so they talked about ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen, and they, when a guest would say thank you, they would respond with the words, my pleasure, or it's my pleasure. And Truett really liked that, and he imagined what would that look like in a quick service restaurant predominantly staffed by teenagers. What experience would people have if, when they said thank you, the guest said, my pleasure? So Truett had very few edicts. In fact, when I came on board in 1985, I know he had three rules for operators. Number one was never open on Sunday. Second was never change the menu. And third was always put the money in the bank. And so when he came a number of years ago in front of the entire operator group, we use the word operator and franchisee interchangeably. When he came in front of them and said, when a guest says, thank you, I would like for your team members to say, my pleasure, they weren't used to Truett giving a directive, so they thought it was more of a suggestion and didn't really take Truett so seriously. And to make a long story short, this went on for 10 years, that he stood up every year and made this same request. And then finally, the 10th year, he said, I'm really serious about this. I mean this. When a guest says thank you, I want your team members to say, my pleasure. And it was his son, Dan, who's now Chick-fil-A CEO, that picked up on, hey, Dad is serious about this, and we need to make this part of our work and our hospitality. And so along with that was not just the words, my pleasure, but it was creating the spirit of service that goes along with it. And what it really means is, it's my pleasure to serve you.
Well, it just struck me, and I think there's not a person that goes into Chick-fil-A that hasn't had a wonderful experience. Certainly the food is good, and that matters, but the experience that you have at even a fast food restaurant it's so unique, but it's actually easy to get right, which I think that's probably the most telling sign, is that why don't more organizations get the experience right? But what I want to get to today is really, why does Chick-fil-A get it right? Let's take, for example, you've been at Chick-fil-A 30 years, or almost 30 years. And
right. No, actually almost 31.
So, congratulations.
Thank you.
But it's quite honestly far from the norm today with the millennial job hopper, and most people work for many companies, not just one. Why have you stayed at Chick-fil-A for that long? And if it is a leadership thing, what are some of the things that the leadership team did to help keep you coming back?
Sure. And interestingly, I've been thinking about this in the context of millennials, because when people hear, oh, you've been at that business for 30 years, and many, you know, we have people, not many, but we have people that hear 40. So 20, 30, 40 has become the norm at Chick-fil-A among operators, franchisees, as well as the members of our support center here in Atlanta. And so for me, it's very similar to some of the reasons millennials look for an organization. I thought that was interesting. When I think about the number one reason, it's impact. And it was a function of Truett Cathy, in the fact that, you know, he said, we're not in the chicken business, we're in the people business. And so one of the things that I came to realize very, very early in my time in Chick-fil-A, in fact, probably more even in my interviewing process, was, this is an organization that's about something bigger than themselves. And chicken is only a means to impacting lives and really impacting the world. And I saw that played out by example time and time and time again, by Chick-fil-A's generosity, by Truett's generosity and its family's generosity to other people, and the opportunities that they made available, whether it was educational opportunities or foster care homes or providing opportunities in other countries for people to learn business leadership skills. The list could go on and on and on. And that was the number one reason, is that, and I think that's why a lot of people stay, is to be part of this greater purpose. And I think that's very attractive to millennials. They're looking for something that, if they're going to invest their life and their time in something, that it'll be meaningful for a long time. Secondly, I would say that I've been attracted to this idea of service. And, you know, at Chick-fil-A, we talk about we serve one another. We talk about leaders serve, and that's an acronym that means that leaders see and shape the future. They engage and develop others. They reinvent continuously. They value results and relationships, and they embody the values. And, you know, we demonstrate that with one another. We demonstrate the more responsibility you have in our in our organization, the more, servant-hearted you're expected to be.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite stories was when I first joined Chick-fil-A. I was a 21-year-old administrator and had only been with the company for a few months. And we were doing our annual conference, and I got on the flight to go there. It's a charter flight by Chick-fil-A, and my husband and I found our seats in first class. Needless to say, at 21, that had never been an experience I'd had before. And then I watched as other company executives, including the Cathys themselves, walked through first class into the coach section of the plane. And we talk about we're the first to, our leaders are the first to arrive and the last to leave, and that's that's the spirit at Chick-fil-A. So that would be the second reason. And then finally, John, the third reason is we talk about we care about you personally. And that's true about how we treat those we work with and those we serve. And that care is extended, you know, our cultures that we live life together. So my example is when my dad died a few years ago, and I was at the funeral home. It wasn't my neighborhood. It wasn't even my church community. It wasn't my other friends. It was my Chick-fil-A family that showed up with the food and sat there and made sure I ate since I hadn't eaten all day. And we just have this genuine care for one another. So those are the three reasons that I've stayed so long that I think we attract talent to Chick-fil-A, and that's been demonstrated by from ownership to our leadership.
Well, it's just, they're fantastic stories. I mean, I'll remember the fact that the CEOs and the leadership team walks past the 21-year-old in a plane to sit and coach. I mean, as long as I can, as long as I live, right? I mean, it's a it's a tremendous example of servant leadership, and making you feel special, and that you are a part of something great, and you're going to be a key to its growth. And I think that's really where it stands out to me. You mentioned about the purpose and feeling that you're working for something bigger than yourself or more than just a chicken sandwich. What are some of the things that you do now to communicate that purpose to your teams? Or how does that continue to live on at Chick-fil-A now that you're multiple generations of leadership teams in?
Well, first of all, it's something that we refer to constantly. When I talk about purpose, I think about our corporate purpose, which is literally etched in stone outside of our support center, so that everyone who walks through the door knows exactly why they're there every day, and it gives you something to focus on. So just a little background on our corporate purpose. It was 1982, and Chick-fil-A was experiencing its first sales slump ever. Truett Southey, our founder, had opened his first restaurant in 1946 and had been very successful. The first Chick-fil-A restaurant actually opened in 67. And so this was 1982. We were experiencing a sales slump. And the other thing that happened that year is we'd moved onto our brand new corporate campus, 75 acres south of Atlanta, beautiful building. And Truett had invested in all of that. And so he was in debt and having a sales slump. So he took
not a good combination
committee.
For a business owner.
No, not at all. And so he had to figure out what to do. And he took his executive committee away on a retreat. And a lot of organizations, you know what they'll do in that situation. They'll come back with a reduction in force plan or cost reduction plan or a new sales contest to motivate people to sell more chicken. But our executive committee, that's not what they came back at all. They came back with a purpose why we're in business at all. And it was based on two tenets, which is, the quote is, to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that's entrusted to us and a positive impact on all who come in contact with Chick-fil-A. And so that idea of faithful stewardship of all the resources, the time, treasure, talent, and then the positive impact, and that's just something we literally talk about every day. It's the filter we run every decision through. Am I being a faithful steward if I make this decision? Is my behavior a positive influence if I do these things? And so that's given us a North Star to our organization, if you will. And it's something that while you have all kinds of strategies and all kinds of individual functional opportunities, and you have over 2,000 restaurants that are running their strategy, it's still the thing that kind of unifies the organization about what we're all about and has stood the test of time.
Why do you think so many organizations get that wrong? I mean, it feels like it would be such an easy thing to get right, to know this is my purpose on this earth, and this is the purpose of this organization and why we're doing what we're doing. But I feel like very few companies have that motivation. Most of them have the bottom line, the profit over their people. Why do you think that is?
Well, I could only assume things because I already told you that I've been around, you know, how long I've been around, and that I was 21 when I started it. So I have very little experience, and I always feel a little bit like, oh, who am I to analyze another organization and why they come, you know, why they are where they are. But the only thing I can say that I've observed from time to time is people do lose their way. So if the reason that we've been able to be successful this is because, without a doubt, we know exactly what we're in business to do, because Truett told us all the time, we're in the people business, we're in the people business, we're in the people business. And so my assumption would be, my observation of others who've not been able to do that, is that, you know, sometimes they just lose their way from that. They forget what their roots are. They don't understand the foundation of which success has been built on, and they stray away from that. And so I think that any time an organization is struggling, you know, one of the best places to start is to go back and say, okay, how did we start this? Why did we fundamentally go into business? And try to rebuild that from the foundation. You know, there was once a firm foundation. Go back to that foundation, try to rebuild from there.
Yeah, it's great advice. I think there's many reasons people are in business, and it just seems like this isn't a, it's not a hoax. Doesn't feel like Chick-fil-A is putting on any kind of show to keep growing. It feels so genuine as a customer that I think it's impossible for it not to be genuine internally. And to hear the stories and to hear, you know, as you read the book, it's my pleasure that you've written, it's clear as day that that's really what happens internally. Is that why you wrote the book, to really communicate that? Or maybe that's the simple question, is why did you write the book?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, this genuineness that you talk about, we have to hold it all loosely. And to be, you know, if you puff up with pride, you know, hey, we've got this figured out, then that's, you know, that's really, I love the book that Jim Collins wrote, How the Mighty Fall. Mm-hmm. You have to be very conscious of that you keep doing the things right, and you have hope that it moves you in the right direction. And of course we set goals and hope to achieve them. But at the same time, we recognize that, you know, we're just as fallible as anyone. And so we have to, you know, for us, it's been a focus on trying to do the right things for the right reasons, and that it would work out and be successful for Chick-fil-A. Now, back to your question about why I wrote the book, it was for two reasons. The first is, I had had such a wonderful mentorship with Truett Cathy, and what he taught me about, not just that we're in the people business, but because of my role in the business, he would often say, you know, don't forget, people decisions are the most important decisions you make. And it certainly started with the selection of people, because he believed if you selected the right person, then it solved a lot of problems. And so we invested heavily in that. What I wanted is to never forget what he taught us. And so those of us who were fortunate enough to have a relationship with Truett, that we would remember these very foundational things that we would build the company on, and that it would make it continue to make it successful in the future. And then secondly, it was for the people who would never know Truett. The people who, you know, even as our organization, he's just been gone a little less than 2 years, and, you know, our organization has grown tremendously with people who'll never know him. Even team members that work for operators, I would hope that they would learn about Truett from that, because he had such great things to teach. And so it was for those of us who knew him, we wouldn't forget, and those who never knew him, that they would know what he thought was important.
Yeah, it's awesome. And now that his, you know, kids and grandkids are involved, you just hope that they have the same principles and characteristics and values that he had, and it sounds like they do. The thing you just mentioned about talent, it kind of comes up over and over again on the show, that how important people are in the potential success of a business. What are some of the things that, one, you look for in people, that maybe are core principles at Chick-fil-A? And then two, what can a young professional do to stand out as a, you know, as a talented person that would add value to an organization like Chick-fil-A?
For our organization, one of the first things we look for, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is a servant spirit. We're in the service business, and so we have to we look for people who genuinely want to serve others, whether they're working at the support center, because our job at the support center is serving operators. I talk about our former president, and it's my pleasure, and he had a saying. He said, if you're not serving chicken, you better be serving someone who is. And so obviously we also look for that quality in operators that will operate the business. And I think that they've done a great job of selecting team members that are servant-minded. And so that's really one of the very first things we look for.
But how do you identify that when you haven't worked with somebody? Or how do you try to do it? Or how do the operators try to do it? How do you coach them to look for people with a servant heart that aren't putting on a show because they know the culture?
Well, how we do this for operators and support center staff is that we look at the past track record in two ways. One is through our interviewing process, and I talk about this, and it's my pleasure that we use a behavioral interviewing model. Mm-hmm. And what that simply means is looking at people's past performance and behavior as a predictor of their future performance. So when we get into an interview with them, we don't ask them what they would do in a situation. We ask them what they have done. So we look for those examples that they have a bias towards service. And it comes up. It comes up in how they spend their time, if they're involved in their community, if they're coaching Little League, if they're serving in various nonprofits. I mean, you can go through a whole list that it's in their DNA to serve others. And in their work track record, mm-hmm. What has been their, and then secondly, to go, I think it's the most important thing, is the referencing. And we don't just talk to their business references. We talk to anybody they've been accountable to. And so while we're looking at business references, and we want to look for evidence of servant-mindedness and a leadership track record, which would be number two that we would be looking at, we also talk to references and get that from other people that they may have been associated with, whether it's a person not brand new to school and we're talking to one of their professors or advisors or somebody that they've been accountable to on campus in a leadership capacity, or it's somebody with a strong, lots of experience and strong background that we're trying to determine their service to others, in all the things they've been involved in.
I think this is such a critical point, and I think young professionals all over the world should hear it, because what you're looking for is, what is your track record of service, number one? What are you doing that I can see, that I can visually look at? If it means I look at your Facebook page and I see the service you're doing and not – out doing things just for yourself. And then number two, do you have people in your life that hold you accountable for being something beyond yourself? And I think these two ideas of service of others and accountability are just massive things for young people to get right. And they can get it right by being proactive. And so I think those are two really important points to kind of hammer home if you're listening, to say, what am I doing for other people that others could see that I'm doing? Not in a self-serving way, but is it visible? And two, do I have people in my life to hold me accountable to certain standards?
Yes. And, one of the things that I have great faith in, when you talk about this generation, I think they do a great job of this. I mean, they are out serving. They do care about other people. Maybe far more than even the generation that I'm a part of. And so I think that the ability to highlight that and to be prepared to talk about that, not just what you learned in school or not just what your work experience has been, but really the well-roundedness of your whole life and how you spend your free time. Is your free time all about, playing video games and hanging out with your friends, or do you spend some of that time in service to others, making our communities better?
Yeah, it's awesome advice, Deanne. I'm so glad you shared it today. Let's end with some fun stuff. A couple questions I like to ask. I know you have three kids, and you're living in the Atlanta area. So what's harder, leading at work or leading at home?
Definitely leading at home. I have three sons, almost all adults. The youngest is 17. And, here I spend time leading people the same age in my organization. And for some reason, they like to listen to me more. I always get a kick out of the fact that I have so many of my friends, children, and other people that come to me for career advice and help. And my own children, though, they don't want to listen to their mom. They'd rather get that from someone else.
Yeah.
So definitely harder at home.
Sounds like just standard boys, really. I think we're just a little more hard-headed than our counterparts, particularly when it comes to mom as we get to that magic age of 17 to 23. So I wouldn't take it personally. I think it's just the age. If you could have dinner with any three leaders, living or dead, again, or if at all, who would those three leaders be?
Oh, I get asked that question so many times. And, I think about somebody in my life that must have been a leader that I never knew, which was my maternal grandmother. And I say she must have been a leader because of the fruit that came from her, but she died before I was born. And so she kind of tops that list of like, oh, I'd like to know what she was like because I saw the family she produced, and she really must have been something. And so that usually tops the list. And then secondly for me, I would probably choose somebody that other people might not think of, but it would be the Apostle Paul. But if you study how I serve, I have such an interest in mission work, and he's known as the first missionary. And I would love to spend some time hearing about his journeys and his life. And then lastly, I think Oprah Winfrey would top the list for me. I think she, how she has built the empire that she built and the obstacles she overcame to do that would be quite intriguing. And so those are probably the three I would pick.
Well, that's an awesome list. You have the Apostle Paul, you have Oprah, and you have your maternal grandmother. And you didn't even name Truett. You've probably had so many meals with them, it wouldn't be worth having another one. But
I would always look forward to another opportunity with Truett. But I tell you what, it's my pleasure. One of my first meals at Chick-fil-A actually was sitting at his table at the Christmas party, which was just another example of his servant-heartedness.
Well, where can people find the book? We'll certainly link it in the show notes, but just an awesome story about, you know, why you wrote the book and Chick-fil-A and some of the things that you guys do so well that keep so many of us coming back almost every day. The Chick-fil-A is literally in the mall. I can hit a driver to the Chick-fil-A from my office. And so it's real danger territory every lunch hour.
Well, they can find me at deanneturner.com, and that's my website. You can certainly order from there. Also order the book at amazon.com and other retailers. Please follow me on Twitter at deanneturner, and then lastly on Instagram at deanneturner. It's my dot pleasure.
It's my dot pleasure. We'll make sure to send people to the right places. But thank you so much for coming on, Deanne. We appreciate it and for sharing such wisdom. And we look forward to continuing to take the lessons that you've taught us today around servant heart and servant leadership and apply them in our own lives. So we appreciate you being on.
Thank you so much, John. I've enjoyed it very much, and I hope you have a great day.
You too. If you're new to the show, we hope you come back. If you've been here a while, you've been listening, it would be great if you could leave us a review and recommendation on iTunes. I get a chance to read every single one of them. You can follow me personally on Twitter, on Snapchat, at John G. Eads. And our company is @learn_loft. You can follow us on LinkedIn or on Twitter.